Welcome to the Future of Education, a special IBM podcast. I'm your host, Barbara Finkelstein. I'm speaking with Michael King, Director, Market Development for the Global Education Industry at IBM. Welcome, Michael. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Barbara. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Now, I think the word future implies changes afoot in society and in the technologies that might make education more accessible to more people everywhere. So why don't you start by talking about some of the social and economic issues that'll have an impact on the education of the workforce? And you can talk about these factors globally and regionally.
The first thing to understand is that education is perhaps the most critical enabler of economic development in a knowledge economy. And we see this regardless of the level of government or organization that we deal with, whether it's local, state or regional, or even national governments, all very concerned about skills development of their citizens and their constituents, how they can compete more effectively in a global economy. And so it has put a tremendous focus on education. In addition to that, there are just tremendous technological and demographic changes afoot in terms of how education is delivered, the requirements for education globally. If you look at the kind of technological change we have in various industries, it's creating a tremendous challenge in terms of the skills that we have. The estimate is that the United States is going to need 50% more computer engineers by 2012 than we have today. The U.S. Commerce Department has estimated that a person in their work life will need to be retrained 5 to 7 times, essentially. And so all of this creates tremendous demand to deliver more education, to do it more effectively. The changes in demographics, of course, put even greater pressure on the educational industry. In the United States, in 2003, our elementary school enrollment was the highest ever in our nation, as well as demographic changes in the types of students that we see. In the United States, 50% of college students are over the age of 25 and are working either part or full time. So these are not traditional students in the sense of someone going and getting a four-year baccalaureate degree. So all of this has combined to create tremendous changes and requirements for change in the education industry.
You know, Michael, I think in part we're talking about the power of education to help eradicate poverty. And we're also talking about ensuring the competitiveness of workers in all kinds of societies. Do you foresee a skills gap that potentially could affect productivity in the developed and developing worlds?
Well, we do. In fact, just looking across most of the developed economies, 79 million baby boomers are going to be retiring between 2010 and 2025. So that begins to put some real pressure on developed economies. 60% of jobs being created today require skills that only 20% of U.S. workers possess. And globally, Ed Gordon, who authored the 2010 meltdown about the impending job crisis, has estimated that in the United States, Europe, Japan, China, and India face a shortfall of 32 million well-educated professionals over the next decade. So a tremendous skill gap that governments and educational institutions are trying to address.
What does IBM foresee happening in education? What's the role of the IT vendor and consultant?
Well, I think first that education is going to change. We are already seeing tremendous focus on outcomes and ensuring that individual students are meeting the skills objectives, whether it's at an elementary school level, particular grades, as well as ensuring that they're having skills to compete in a global workforce. We see education becoming more individualized and personalized, and that out of all of this, there's going to be what we call K-80 education, a real lifelong commitment to learning, where learning itself becomes a critical skill. All of this is going to require changes in the way that educators, new ways of teaching, provide changes to administrators in terms of how they manage educational institutions. Just like in healthcare today, we see a lot of opportunity to exploit open technologies. Many people are familiar with the discussions around common patient data records, about finding ways to improve the quality of healthcare delivery while also lowering costs to make it easier for healthcare providers and payers to communicate with each other. A similar issue around driving open standards and open technologies in education is underway, and that's going to help make it easier for student records to be transferred across different institutions, for us to measure how well students are learning in different areas and to track that progress and perhaps remediate them with specific programs. All of this requires open standards and open technologies, just as it does in the healthcare industry.
You've been talking about open standards and open technologies, and I think you might have said open source also. Can you briefly describe the differences between all of these terms?
Well, we use open technology as an umbrella for all of these, but let me talk a little bit specifically about what we mean with this. One is open standards. And open standards are really about enabling systems to communicate and to work together. A perfect example of that is the internet, where we have agreed on basic networking standards so that one network can communicate with another. And we've seen the power of that, how that's opened up the ability for people to communicate across the globe and to have access to a wide variety of information. When we deal with educational institutions, we believe that open standards across things like student data records, student portfolios, learning content and assessment, and all of these various applications, as we better define standards for how they can communicate, that's going to free up the flow of information, help lower costs for institutions, and also improve the quality of delivery of education, because we'll have better access to information, systems will work better together, and perhaps we'll create a lot of new applications and capabilities that we don't even see today. With open source, we don't at IBM see that as exclusively meaning free. I think we look at it as a community-developed process for creating software. What we've seen as being successful is open source projects like Linux and like Apache and Eclipse that have created a community of both customers and vendors that can come together and work around a community-owned platform. And so what open source can do when coupled with open standards is to really help accelerate the development of standards and just accelerate the development of real solutions that can impact the customer's problem.
Is there any advantage to using proprietary systems in education?
The importance here is how well they adhere to standards. With open standards, one has the ability to interoperate or mix and match across different systems. And a good example of this, again, is we offer an entry-level version of WebSphere Community Edition for application servers that is based on the Apache Geronimo platform. You can get it downloaded for free, but you can also step up and get service and support from that from IBM, and then as your needs grow, you can move on to the commercial or proprietary license versions of WebSphere from IBM.
What's IBM doing today to help educational institutions get ready for some of these challenges we've been talking about?
IBM's corporate and community relations and our IBM Foundation has been active over several years doing things like the Reinventing Education Project, which was sponsored through the IBM Foundation, and we put grants into school districts all over the world, actually, and coupled IBM researchers into these districts and built real-life technical solutions to problems that those districts were facing. We've also done a lot of open technology pilots around the world. Today we're doing some in places like Brazil and other areas where corporate and community relations from IBM is working with nations and states to look at their challenges and try to do specific projects to address some of their issues. We also have the IBM University Relations team that is focused on a lot of these longer-term issues, particularly in the area of developing technical skills. Our IBM Academic Initiative makes available resources to help schools and colleges put together training programs, curricula, and class material around these open technologies that we've been talking about to prepare their students to be competitive in the global workforce. We've also instituted some work to define services as a science with some of these leading institutions.
Our education customers are becoming more and more savvy about technology. What do you think they're looking for in an IT consultant?
Well, I think they're looking for someone that really knows the industry, that understands the challenges that educational institutions are facing, and that have experience working with educational institutions. We have a long history in working with education. We are active and a leader in a lot of the new and innovative projects in education. We are a commercial leader with the Sakai project and other open source application initiatives in education. This spring we announced grants of code to the Sakai community and commercial support and dedicated resource from our software teams. So we're trying to help foster a commercial ecosystem that can bring unique industry value to these educational institutions.
Looking out over, let's say, the next 10 or 25, even 50 years, what do you think has to happen in the education industry?
Well, I think the important thing is a recognition by everyone of the critical importance that education plays in our health as a society. whether that is having fully informed and educated citizenry that can help guide political processes in a country, to having competitiveness in a global economy and being able to create and sustain jobs in society. There are tremendous opportunities for people to get engaged and support the education industry, whether it's getting involved with their local school district and supporting a teacher individually in a class, to being involved at a national or a state level in various educational organizations, as well as just from a business perspective.
Well, we're living in a complex world where the word future can take on just about any kind of meaning, progressive or apocalyptic. I'd like to thank you, Michael, for helping to unravel some of the issues that all of us who care about education are thinking about.
Well, thank you, Barbara.
You've been listening to The Future of Education, a special IBM podcast conversation with Michael King, Director of Market Development for the Global Education Industry at IBM. I'm your host, Barbara Finkelstein. Thanks for joining us.